calls by who said to me that they are in the process of calling a media, what do you call these things?
A briefing.
To respond to the article in the media today relating to NERSA. As you know, there are difficulties around the issue of the coal price and so on. I don't know if Bonani has given out the... I see Peter hasn't got it and
no.
Violet hasn't got it. Okay. There's this... I guess it was just done as a complete set. You recall that we took at the autumn school members, we took a substantial input on the pricing. There's this whole thing, and I take it, Mr. Mwababa, you have got this on your little computer thingy there. We're not obviously here today to look at pricing. We have done that quite substantively in the autumn school. But clearly the issues playing out in the media today on the back of the NERSA announcement pertain very squarely to the pricing and so on, particularly of coal. Now, what I've told him, and he accordingly said that perhaps that's why Mr. Mwababa is here as well, to field any questions members may have around this matter, if there are any. I think we've exhaustively dealt with them. But for what it's worth, Mr. Mwababa is here, and he will take whatever questions you have over and above that. But I've also said to Mr. Marojas that the press statement should be sent to us. In fact, I forgot to send him... my boss is fax number because Loretta's not here. Will you just remind me after this meeting to just send him the fax number? So, the next time you get this venue, okay, I'm already, I can't say I'm going to fire you, but because you're already leaving. Ask, don't you guys who are sitting at the back there come and sit here, because then it's going to prevent people from going at the back. Sit down, sir. Sit down. You'll get documents. Don't you want to come around this way? Come around this way, please. Just, okay, these two people here, so that people who come in late can go that side, so that we don't disturb. Okay. What I also want to just say is that we are on course for our trip to Transnet next week. Remember, we're spending 2 days with Transnet. There are a whole lot of issues to be canvassed there. Please, members, remember we are traveling to Durban on Monday. So you need to, if you are in a place on Sunday evening that has got no flights, very early flights out to Durban, you need to tell Bonani, because you will need to then fly out on Sunday evening so that we can rendezvous very early on Monday morning. I do not want to sit in Durban on Monday waiting for members, and we won't be doing that. So please, Bonani, you will just follow up on those things. If there are any difficulties and so on, please contact Bonani before he leaves to another committee. Bonani will be leaving us in the next while. You may or may not see him again, depending on when that happens. But essentially, as you know, Bonani is a lawyer by trade, to his eternal shame. and he has been, I don't know how to say this. I don't know. He will be joining the Justice Committee as the second committee secretary there. As you know, the Justice Committee has got tons of legislation in the next while, and out of the goodness of my heart, I said he could go, but very, very reluctantly. Mr. Llewellyn Brown, some of you may know Mr. Llewellyn Brown, who's worked in local governments, will be joining this committee as soon as they've finalized legislation in that committee there. So we will see a change, but exactly when, we're not sure, because obviously it depends on when local government finalizes the legislation before it. But I expect it to be in the next week or so. So, Mr. Romano, let me at this stage take the opportunity to thank you for your services to this committee. As much as you've not been with this committee for too long, you have certainly become a very central and integral part of this committee. And I know I speak on behalf of all of the members when I say thank you very much, and we really appreciate the spirit in which you've attended to our meeting, and certainly from the chair, I can say to members quite categorically that you've been an extraordinary professional, and we wish you the best of luck in your future endeavors. Why you want to be a committee secretary, I'm not quite sure, but that's a different issue. So thank you very much for all you've done, and we hope your stint with justice is very, very rewarding. Okay.
Yeah, thank you.
Okay, we're now going to go into the presentation. We have with us Mr. Bongani Nwababwa and Mr. Kanan Lakshmibharat. And Advocate Prakash Nigavanda is, of course, a regular face in this committee. I welcome you all on this chilly Cape Town day. And we hope that when you walk down the street in Adderley Street, you are not stoned, things thrown at you, and so on. We hope we've treated you civilly at least. That's the case.
Thank you, Chair. Yes, that's the case. But
damn.
Some people who are annoying have been not shit, but wonderful.
They were undercover.
I must speak to my people. they haven't done well. But
it was an unmasked car.
Okay, we're going to hand over to you, Mr. Nwababwa. Over to you, and I take it you'll give us a presentation. What we'll then do, as soon as the tea arrives, if it arrives,
here. It's coming.
That means it'll arrive at lunchtime. So as soon as the tea arrives, we'll adjourn and have some tea and then come back, and then we'll engage with you on your presentation. And then perhaps thereafter, if you want to talk to some of the financial implications over the winter period and so on, we can take that as well. Okay. Thank you.
Thank you, Chair. And thank you also to members of your committee and others present here from the press. As you have introduced the team, it's Kenan Lakshmibharat on my left and Prabhashnik Govender on my right. We are going to be covering a review of the national power system and the prognosis for winter this year, which Kenan will cover. Kenan is the acting managing director for system operation, whose job is basically to balance the supply and demand of the power system.
I'm sorry, Mr. Nwababwa, sorry, I don't think we've got copies of this particular one, so if you would just leave it with Bongani, we will then distribute it after the fact. Okay.
No, we'll do that. And then thereafter, we'll field questions. And on the issue of the NEPSA report, my colleagues in Johannesburg, they are dealing with that in detail, so I won't be in a position to deal with that here. But if there are matters pertaining to system operations and to finance, I can deal with it. Also, if possible, I would prefer not to preempt the NEPSA public hearings on Friday, but we'll take it as it goes. Thank you.
Everybody else has preempted it. Feel free.
Thank you, Chair. What I'd like to
immediately backing as much.
Is that better?
Yeah.
Okay. What I'd like to do in this presentation is just go through some of the recent history that we've experienced in the power system, and you might have seen bits of it, so please tell me where you feel I should go faster or slow down. But just go through that and talk a little bit about what has happened and how we got to this point. I want to, before talking about winter 2008, just take us back to winter 2007 briefly, just to tell you what we went through there. Because we actually went through it quite well, and what happened would be a good lesson and tell us, and to understand that would help us understand how we're going to go through winter 2008. Just before we go into winter 2008, just talk about what the latest is on the Eskom recovery plan very quickly, and then also talk about load shedding and also the suspension of load shedding. What happened, and also the savings that we've seen on the system because some of the reasoning given. So I'm trying to hopefully explain some of that. And then going to winter 2008. If you go back to recent history, I think it's the electrical power system is one of the most complex around because it has both electrical, it has a combination of electrical, mechanical, communication systems. And I think the hardest thing is to list the things that could go wrong. That list could be endless. And the challenge is actually not in trying to manage all those risks. It's going to be very difficult. But what you're trying to do is have enough buffers on your power system to deal with those risks. And some of these are examples that have been thrown around. For example, having enough coal, having enough of a reserve margin, having enough people. And those enable you to react to these problems because really to visualize all these risks is nearly impossible. And I don't think any utility has done. We understand what it could be, but to predict which one's going to happen is near impossible. So that's important. The other thing that we've got to realize is I think it's clear that we've eaten up a lot of these buffers in the last few years. And once you start operating at that edge, it's like driving your car, revving it all the time. The longer you do it, at some stage it'll break down. I think that's the challenge we're facing, and we're trying to pull back from those, from that point. And I think the last point to also be clear is we do not ever want to go into a situation where we black out the country in South Africa. I think that's the ultimate goal, because we can't rely on our neighbours, for example, like the Americans can or the Europeans can. So at all times, from a system operations perspective, we're making sure we don't ever breach those barriers that could lead us there. So that's thinking that goes in our head. And I just wanted to quickly point out two areas on the reserve margin as well, because it comes out a lot, and see if this hopefully makes sense. The first one is something we use in our real-time operations. Right now, every second, we use the operating reserve. And what we're trying to deal with there is, in the short term, demand could change very quickly. Say, for example, within half an hour, it gets very dark, people put their lights on. So you've got to be able to deal with that very quickly. For example, if a cloud comes over Gauteng, over Johannesburg, within half an hour, we need to put on half a power station, literally, because of how dark it gets, and people starting also to put on heaters. So that's one of the challenges we've got to deal with. We could also have any one of our power stations, a unit there, trip at any time, so we have to replenish that power, and we have to deal with that. We also have to somehow, based on history, predict what's going to happen during a day. What's the probability of certain amount of power station units going off, generating units going off within a day and be able to deal with that situation. So we need a reserve margin for that. Then in the medium to long term, when you look a year, 5 years, 10 years ahead, you've got to deal with other uncertainties. So some examples, for example, you might have one of your power station units go out for a long period of time for a major problem, mechanical problem, that you can't fix in a day or 2 days or 3 days. It could take you a few months. You've got to order spares. You might need specific interventions. Also, if you lose, you have significant strikes at a mine, you have problems with logistics, getting coal from a mine to a power station, you've got to be able to deal with that. Also, you can have economic growth spurts happening. You have a commodity boom and then a bust within 2 years. but with that boom, you want to make a production, and you'll find people like the ferrochrome. In South Africa, the classic example is our ferrochrome and ferromanganese, where they can react very quickly to prices, commodity prices. And also, you've got to be able to deal with major seasonal variations, where you have a very cold winter, or you have severe droughts. In South Africa, if you have severe droughts, after 2 or 3 years, you can't use some of our generation resources because of restrictions of the dams. We can't use that water to generate, for example. So those are issues we have to deal with. And what we've done is put together a slide, because everyone talks about the 15% and why do you need 15%, which I've put a slide together which is based not on our work, but on work done by various international utilities and companies. KEMA is a Dutch consulting firm that did some research for the Australian system operator, and it's been widely published. SEGRE is an institution made of about 50 electrical utilities throughout the world, both in developing and developed countries, and they've done some work. And we also, as Eskom, part of a benchmarking group which consists of about 30 utilities from South America, North America, Europe, Australasia, and South Africa. And Africa, we've got about 3 African utilities. So what they've after all that work, what they kind of give an indication is they say, for your real-time needs, your operating reserves, if you need it for the next second, you should have about 4 to 6% of your demand available, and you should keep it at all times, even if it means taking some load off. They say for system security, it's essential. Then a suggestion is 5% for growth, so it gives you time then to decide whether you want to build a certain plant quickly or take your time. Then based on your plant mix, what that means is if you have a lot of gas turbines which can't run forever, they can't run like 100% of the time, you can only run it for 10% of the time because of the way it's designed. If you have a lot of that, you'll need a lot more of it compared to if you have a lot of coal stations where you can run it all the time, or if you have a nuclear power station where you can run it all the time. So based on, and then also, for example, in Brazil where they have a lot of hydropower, they need to build a bit more because of drought situations they have to ration. So based on that, you can have a big variation between 3 and 13% of your demand where you cater for that kind of problem. Then for extreme weather, between 3 and 5%. And that, when you add all that up, your reserve margin typically is between 15 and 29%. And what a reserve margin is your excess capacity on top of your demand. So essentially what you have is between 15 and 29% more than your demand. So that's some of the examples of what makes it up. Now, in South Africa, these are well-known figures, and we have to caution here because people interpret this in different ways. They also add, for example, if we're importing from Cahora Bassa in Mozambique, sometimes people add that on. But what we've done here is just look at our resources in South Africa and what we've contracted. And you can see that reserve margin has declined. The reason it went up in 2005 is because we had a mild winter and we had a drop in some of the commodity prices. So some of the smelters took that opportunity to do maintenance. But this is the trend, and you can see it has come down. And if you remember the previous page, our current reserve margin only allows us to cater for our operating reserves and nothing more. So this is the constraint that we've been facing. We started seeing it, predicting it earlier on, and then seeing it in 2004 in reality on the system, where we had problems and we over peak periods, and we had to start using our contracted interruptible loads that we had put together. And another example of this is this slide, where we have emergency resources at our disposal in the system operator. And I think it's only important to note how it's increased over the last 4 years. What the gray slide is where we start, it's like driving your car. Again, let me use that analogy. The ideal thing is to drive it between 3 and 4,000 revs. You don't want to go fast more than that because you start straining the engine. When you use it at that level called EL1, our power stations, what you're doing is for short periods putting it into the red. And at some stage, you've got to stop doing that. You can't keep doing that. You can do it for short periods to give you an extra boost, but you've got to bring it back and then do some other work. So you can see how many times we had to call that up. And that light blue here, or light green, is how many times we use those smelters that we have contracted as interruptible load, mainly aluminium smelters. You can see, again, the tightness of our situation is reflected. is how often we started using these resources in the last 3 to 4 years. The previous Parliament Portfolio Committee actually came to National Control during the evening peak, and we actually showed them how we would use these resources in reality. Now, what's important as well is to look back at our generation performance, because it has been a concern. And rather than trying to, I'll explain these points. On this side is the number of megawatts, amount of megawatts that is not available. And this has been the trend over the last 3 years. Where you see the dips, one here, here, and here, are the winter periods. And where you see these spikes are typically the summer periods in between November and January. And it's become a seasonal pattern, and this is an average during a day. This line here is 2,500 megawatts. It's the target that I think the Minister of Public Enterprises has publicly talked about, 2,500 megawatts. That is about 6% of our, 6 to 7% of our plant not being available. That's what it equates to currently. And you can see clearly in the last 3 years, and I'll then focus on this, but what you can see in the last 3 years is in winter we actually have better performance, but in summer we have difficulty. And it was exacerbated in the last year, and I'll spend a bit more time on that. This is the performance over the last 4 months. And you can see the trouble we had in January when we had those significant load shedding events. And most of it was due to key drivers were about the quality and availability of coal. Where we had bad quality, it damaged some of our equipment. And where we had availability problems, either supply or it was very wet, so we couldn't handle it practically, then we had to reduce the output of our power stations because it couldn't burn fast enough. So that's the challenge we have. If you look at the past 3 years, if you look at the target, we've met the target about 68% of the time. But you can see the past 4 months, and mainly due to January and February, we only met the target about 44% of the time. But in April, there has been a significant improvement. We've met it 87% of the time. So it has been some work, and also given us some space to do some other additional maintenance and improving the coal supply situation has helped. And let me then go back to now how we've now started. When I talked about the operating reserve margin, the net reserve margin, about building buffers. So what the focus of the Eskom recovery plan has been is to build those buffers again as much as we can. Because I think it's better to be predictable about how you behave rather than being unpredictable. I think that's been our challenge. And it's about trying to be more predictable and trying to be clear about what risks we're still facing. And that's what the Eskom recovery plan is about. If you go to the supply side, the first focus has been on plant performance and improving plant performance. And the way we've been doing that is making sure we have the right resources and giving the right windows for maintenance, giving opportunity to get certain work done. So that's been the initial focus. Now, what happened in February is after the initial set of incidents, we identified 23 units where we wanted to do specific work. It's a bit small, I'm sorry. I'll have to read it. We identified 23 units where we needed work, and to date we've done 17, we've worked on 17 of those units. The remaining 6, we need to find space to work on them. This is on top of our normal planned maintenance schedule. This is where we identified certain problems because of what happened in January and February. What we've also done is we've brought in external companies. We've got companies from the US, EPRI and Accenture. We had from France, EDF, and from Germany, RWE, which is a utility. They've come in and given us various bits of advice and reviewed some of our maintenance practices, as well as looked at the plant that we have and gave us advice on where we think we could do work better in. So we've used some of that advice as well, and I've started to apply it. And there has been an improvement in the last month, as you can see, but that focus, we still have to work on it. We still need some time to improve certain areas, and that will take at least 2 to 3 years to get done. Some areas. The second big focus on the supply side is on managing the coal supply and handling. So firstly, to procure the coal, get it delivered to the sites that we need. This is on top of our normal coal purchases. And then ensuring we can handle that coal, making sure it's the right quality, so it's not wet or it's not too fine, it's not dust, but it's manageable. And can be burned in our power station. So that's also been another challenge. We currently, if you look as of yesterday, we had 17.4 days. That means if you on an average, our power stations could run 17 days without having to get another piece of any other coal supply coming in. So that's what it means. But if you look at the specific stations, we have 12 coal-fired power stations. 5 of them, we are above 20 days now. Another 3 between 15 and 20 days, and hopefully get to 20 pretty soon. And then another 4 between 13 and 15 days. And over the last month, this has been on a steady upward trend. And our present challenge is not actually doing the procurement. It's getting it out of the ground and getting it delivered. There's various issues from getting it mined to delivery to the logistics and that we're facing at the moment. And we're engaging with the relevant government departments and mining houses on those issues. But we've actually purchased the coal. I mean, we've given a mandate to purchase the coal. Then if you look at the demand side initiatives, that's the other side of the buffer. We've now started working very, very closely, and I'll spend a bit more time on what we're doing with key industrial customers as a grouping, and with the top 11 municipalities as another grouping. And our focus with them is to talk through what happened in January, February, understand what problems they had, but then work together on how to accelerate the energy savings, understand how to measure and verify the savings, and then to get further savings, and what can we do to unblock any issues. So we've got separate task teams that are meeting. We've kept them separate because they have different issues, but at some stage in June, we'll start talking, bringing them together as well. The second thing that we've been doing is working on the energy conservation program, and I'd rather leave it at that because there's different views on how it should pan out. But our biggest challenge is making sure we are aligned with all the government departments and the various stakeholders outside government. And I think that's our biggest focus at the moment, getting alignment on what should happen. Energy Summit was an example of also trying to get that alignment. But we need to work on that. That's been our biggest challenge. Then on how do we plan and operate and expand? I think that's the next buffer. Clearly, one of the things had to be done is to bring back a bit of focus to the planning function. What we've done is we've merged our transmission and generation expansion planning to one area, which sits now under, for example, I'm responsible for that currently under our division. What we've also done is South Africa never had a very clear standard for security of supply. It was implied, but it wasn't 100% clear. So we've developed standards, adequacy standards, as we call it, which says on transmission, this is what we expect, generation, what we expect. And we've got the transmission one already published now as a part of regulations. That means it's part of the grid code, which in effect is part of the law. And it's done by the regulator. We're trying now to get the generation side through as well. So that's our next step. We've prepared some drafts that we're engaging with the regulator on and DME. Because once that's entrenched in regulation, it does two things. One is it clearly sets the standard. Second, it gives anyone, regardless of who it is, a planning entity, the teeth to implement. That means you can now say, regardless of anything else, we need to meet these standards. Anything on top of that is nice to have, but at least these are the minimum standards. It strengthens any investment cases that have to be made and so on. So it helps with that. What we've also done is we've developed very detailed plans for the short, medium, and long term, because you need different types of planning for those three scenarios. So we at least understand the depth of the problems, not necessarily all the solutions, because that's work in progress with all the stakeholders. At least in different time frames, what the potential problems are and scenarios if we don't do certain things and do certain things. So that's been done. The next thing on the expansion side is Eskom, with government, has launched 3 programs to attract non-Eskom generation. And these are publicly available. There's also a very nice guide on explaining the 3 programs. The first is called the Pilot National Cogeneration Program, which is about a 20-25-year program. The second one is called a Medium-Term Power Purchase Program, which also has prices published. So there's no guesswork there. The prices are published, so as long as you can meet the threshold, there is your bid is going to be favorably received. That's for a certain period, 8 to 10 years, after which then you have to look at where you fit. And then the last one is a baseload independent power producer program. in line with recent cabinet memos around less convenient single buyer, but needing to attract independent power purchase producers. And these are just what we started with. It is possible that other programs will be introduced if these do not fill some of the gaps and we need to attract other investors in. But again, we'll work with government on those issues. The third one is we have current bill programs. We have our return to service of our old mothball stations, so trying to ensure there's focus on getting that completed. And then the programs that we've got approved and we're building are Gas One, which is expanding our current open cycle gas turbine facilities near Atlantis and in Mossel Bay. That's Khirikwa and Sankalek. And it's doubling that up. Then Medupi, which is near Lephalale. Ingula, which is near Van Rienen's Pass. And Bravo, which is near Witbank. We haven't put the new name of that power station up yet. So for now, we're using the code name, which is Bravo. So these are projects that we're building, physically getting this ground broken. You can see the ground. You can see what we're building there. Other projects are in the pipeline, but I haven't put that up in terms of now going through business cases and so on. So it's just making sure we keep on track. And then the last element is the decision-making process. I mean, that's been a big issue about streamlining those processes from mining rights to EIAs to financing, servitude. So all these issues require, I mean, Eskom cannot get this done, and also non-Eskom generation would also have the same challenge. So it's about how do we make those decisions still within the frameworks, regulatory and legal frameworks, but getting it done as quickly as possible. And we have made some progress on some fronts, and others it's still work in progress. So these are the initiatives at a high level that we're working on to build these buffers again, that we're focusing on. If you ask us what the recovery team is trying to do, and there's a dedicated program manager, but the rest of the people are working within the various divisions, but with one focused program manager on these issues. Okay. This, I don't know if I want to go into 2007 review. Should I stop to get questions or should I just continue?
Yeah. Can we stop for
two? Sure. Using them diesel availability becomes an issue. So you've got to plan pretty carefully how you use it, because we can't store a large amount in South Africa. We have to bring it in barges. So that's why we use it in a certain way, and we plan ahead for that. If we're in red, we predict that we're going to use a high level of the high usage, we'll have high usage of the open cycle gas turbines. We'll probably use up all our interruptible loads. And over peak periods, if we have certain incidents, we might even go into shedding, load shedding, emergency load shedding. So that the risk is there, in short term. And where we are brown, which is what happened earlier this year, where we will have to resort to emergency load shedding generally throughout parts of the day as well, and continue on a rotating basis. So that's the color coding that you'll see on our prediction. And I'll just show you the snapshot without going into too much detail. If you look at last year, this was from first week of June to the end of September, you'll see that the first 2 weeks were brown, but it turned out to be red in reality. So what you've got here, the color coding here is the potential shortfall, what the color coding of that week would be.
So that's what you predicted.
What we predicted it would be. And then this is what actually happened. And the way we classify this is by what we actually used. So for example, if we used the open cycle to gas turbines a lot, we would call it red. If we load shed brown, there's no brown here, that's orange and that's yellow. It didn't come out too well in the projector. So there's no green last year winter. We actually predicted it to be very tight. And why things got better here is that our load was lower than forecast, and we had also shifted some of one of our units that was planned to be maintained at that point. We shifted it a bit later. Why these are yellow when we predicted a worse situation is our generation performance was better in most cases, or the load was a bit lower. That means it wasn't as cold as we predicted. Why it got worse here, where it is a bit more red, is in some weeks we had the load, it was a bit colder than we predicted. We had some cold snaps in early August, and then we had a little bit of a cold snap again late September. And then there were periods where our generation performance was not as good as the average. It was worse than average. So we went into red, but nowhere did we have to go into emergency load shedding at all. But we had to use our gas turbines quite a bit in August and September to meet demand.
What are those two brown ones?
These are orange.
They're orange.
Sorry, yeah, that is brown. That color is brown. That's right. Just the colors from the projector came out. So this is how, if you look, this is the kind of way we try to plan ahead in the short term. We only use this kind of color coding for the next, say, 3 to 6 months, because after that there's a lot of uncertainty around how we maintain the plant. We can shift things. But for the next 3 to 6 months, we produce this on a rolling basis. So this is the, we'll come back to see how 2008 is going to look in a similar way. Can I move on to this? Then just to give you some peak, how the peak demand and peak energy usage meant, remembering that power is in megawatts and energy is in megawatt hours. And power is essentially like if you're driving a car, the minute you press the accelerator, that's the power you get from the engine. But you need a certain amount of fuel to then go the distance, and that's your energy. You translate that fuel into the work that you do to travel. It's the same concept with our power stations. At any time, we can put the accelerator on and get a certain demand out of our power stations, but it's for 1 second. But over time, we have to burn coal and generate that into useful work for everyone else. Mm-hmm. So that's the energy. So we grew in terms of energy, you can see, about nearly 6% last year over winter, the peaks. So compared to a similar day the previous winter, we grew nearly 6%, which is quite significant. And our peak demand grew by nearly 5% in the evening. What we also did is, over that peak, that one peak, we reduced our demand by 500 megawatts from contracts that we had. So the demand could be close to 37,000. So that's just to give you a picture of how much demand grew last year. And that's what we have to also think about for this year when we planned. The other challenge that you have is that peak that you saw, which I showed, was 36,500. It's an average. So what we did is, for every second, we took the value, how hard you press an accelerator, and got an average. But you've got to also deal within that hour with the peaks there, you know, like, and within that hour, we had a peak of nearly 38,000 megawatts at one stage. So remember, the average was about 37. if we added back some of our load that we contracted to come off, it was nearly 38,000. So we had to have capacity online to deal with even that point. So, and the other challenge we have is within 45 minutes, you can put your clock to it from 5:30 when the light comes down till 6:15. It's like a roller coaster ride if you're in the control room. You see this, suddenly this demand just coming in, and you've got to just keep up with it. And you can come up nearly 3,000 in winter, nearly 3,000 megawatts within that hour. Now, 3,000 megawatts is like switching on an entire power station, 6 units in a power station. So we've got to keep it somewhere and make sure we bring it on within 45 minutes. So that's one of the other challenges in winter that we have to deal with in the control room. And it requires a bit of nerve and vigilance to manage that situation. The other thing then you have to do is you've got to transport that power from the power station all the way to to the customers. Now, the challenge with that is you've got to deal with all these different demands. And if you put in, I'm trying to think of analogies, it's like you're coming down a slide, and you can make that slide as steep as you want, but the steeper you make it, the quicker you'll go down. So what you try to do is adjust it for a child and for an adult. It's the same thing with the transmission network. You're adjusting the slide so that you don't go unstable. You deliver just enough to meet the demand, and you've got to keep adjusting it. And that's what we use reactive power devices to adjust that slope so that it's always at the right level. And that's another challenge, because you have to now deal with bringing on the power stations as well as bringing on various devices in your transmission network. So that's one of the challenges that we meet in winter. And the colder it gets, the more steep the challenge. The other challenge that we faced, and I'll quickly point out a few. This is our 11, at that time it was 11 power stations, how they started winter and ended winter in terms of their stockpile days. And I want to focus on three stations particularly. The one is Majuba Power Station, which went from 41 days to 23 days. The second is Tutuka Power Station. Make sure I've got the color here. Went from 25 days to 14 days. Why I point those two power stations out is those are the two power stations which require extensive coal transport. The mines are not at the power station. You need to bring in coal from other sources. And so what happens is over winter, we need to make sure we have enough coal before we start winter, and enough coal during winter that we deliver to keep up with the projection. And even then, it can be a challenge to maintain. But what also is a challenge, you see this power station at the bottom, Arnott Power Station, that went from 30 days to 10. What happens sometimes is if there's a problem at one of the mines supplying the power station, they have coal here, they have supply problems, then you can also deplete your coal stockpiles. So we've got to watch two things. We've got to make sure that the mines that have contracted to deliver a certain level during winter do that. We've got to keep on top of them. The second thing is we've got to ensure that we have enough buffer at Majuba and Tutuka power stations before we get into winter, and then ensure we have enough coal coming through on the coal on the trucks to or on rail so that we survive winter. So those are things that we have to monitor. And this is an example of how we made it through winter last year. The other thing to monitor, I'm going back to generation performance for winter, and I'll focus on this line here. This is the blue line. What that is our generation performance, and I've used it as a percentage from 0 to 8% of our total capacity. And 3% equates to 1,200 megawatts, and 6%, that number that we talked about, 2,400, 2,500. This is July 2006, and this is July 2007. You can see, again, that pattern where in winter our generation performance does improve. There are various factors because of it's cooler, therefore it's less heating on our power stations. There's various factors for that. But for whatever reason, we've seen every winter that performance repeat itself, and we have to make sure we repeat that again this winter. So that's just to give you an indication where we have, in winter, both winters, we've had better than average performance. Okay, so just again, just in summary of how we dealt with winter last year, we had a very significant demand growth, over 5% demand, which was higher than we had very good generation performance, and we need to repeat that. The way the open cycle gas turbines worked last year was very good, and it was the first time we used them. We only built them early January. So we learned a lot about how to operate them and how to supply them with the fuel. And I must make it clear that fuel supply to the gas turbines is one of another big challenge we face, because we don't have enough storage facility in the country. So when we use it extensively, it impacts a lot of stockpiles. It impacts transport into the harbors in Cape Town. So we have to be very careful and sensible how we use it and work with our suppliers carefully. But so it is a challenge. The other challenge is in winter, what we call a load factor. That means it's like having a road, a toll road, and it's only busy 20% of the time or 30% of the time or 40% to its full capacity. In winter, we use it nearly 80 to 85% of the time. So you've got to have... You put on a certain generator, you're going to use it quite hard. So the same concept. We have a bit more slack in some. So that's the other challenge we face. Okay. What I wanted to then spend some time on is now the recent, what has happened in the last 4 months. Again, go back to that before going to winter, around how much energy we actually see is being saved, and review the load shedding that has happened. I think one of the first things we've got to be clear about is when we stopped load shedding, the communication around that was not very good at all. And that's something we definitely had to improve, And hopefully with also some new staff on board in Eskom, we'll focus on that. So I think we have to clearly up front apologize for the way the communication worked out. But the reasons for it we'll go through now. One of the things that we saw, and I'll talk through it, is that we started out with mainly the key industrial customers providing the majority of the savings that we saw. And we've got to a point where we could have lost those savings because no one else was taking part in the view of the key industrial customers, and the evidence was not clear. And the second challenge we faced was a call from various stakeholders to say, let's share this equitably amongst every sector in the economy. How you do that was not clear. The only thing Eskom can do is do it equitably. We have no legal instrument to say 5% here, 10% here, 20% here. So the only thing we could do is do it equitably. And that's why we introduced then the load shedding to do two things. One is to lock in the savings of the current key industrial customers who are providing it, plus trying to share that equitably around everyone else in order to also do certain things, to build those buffers we talked about. Because if we hadn't done that, we could have gone into a downward spiral. At least now we have some space. But once that was done, it was clear once we started doing it that not all the stakeholders were in agreement of how we were doing it. That was the first thing. And we got pressure from different stakeholders, even within government and key industrial customers and so on. So that was the one thing. The second thing is we started seeing in April savings that we could measure from the municipality, and I'll talk a little bit about them. So we could see movement, but not full movement. The other challenge we had is not all the municipalities could explain how they saved. So a lot of it could be just consumers, customers responding because they've heard the messages and responding. But we saw some movement. The third concern was all the noise that was coming around the unintended consequences of load shedding that we saw. From the damage it was, people are alleging it's doing to equipment, other people saying no, it should be designed to do that, security concerns. So we've got all these noise also coming through. So once you evaluated all that, the decision was made, look, we have to step back now, evaluate where we were, engage again with stakeholders to see what we should do next, and also confirm the savings that we're getting and see if there's other ways to accelerate them. So we had to take a step back, and we did that. But at the same time, we must be clear that the risks that we're facing are still there, around coal stockpiles, around generation performance. Those are still operational risks that we can't say are mitigated. So it doesn't mean we can let our foot off saying we don't need the savings. So we had to give those messages, and it's clear the messages have not always been communicated well. And that's something we still have to work on and communicate better. And I want to give a quick overview of how we measure these savings so that it's also clear when you see communication in media, when you see communication from Eskom, what we're talking about. Because there's so many different ways to measure savings, and some people say we're not saving, some we say we do. And we want to explain why people see it differently. Now, this is like a schematic of our power system. This is our generation. This is our transmission system, which is like your main highway system. And then this will be like the city roads delivering power to your end users. And we have three categories of users. We have international, cross-border. We have key industrial customers who can be fed either directly from our transmission network or through our distribution network. And then our distribution customers. Now, we call them key industrial because they're above a certain usage, 100 kilowatt hours. So those are the categories, and we've got to measure them in different ways. Now, we have three ways of measuring savings. The first is we measure what's sent out from our generation side. And in the end, that is the true measure of savings, because that's what we're generating. So we're trying to save there. So that's the main information. Now, that information is available real time. We can, within five minutes, I can tell you what we've done right now. It's sent directly to our National Control Center and to generation. And then we assess it against our forecast every hour. So we actually say we forecast for the next hour we do this, how did we do against it? So that we can keep changing if we need to. So that's important, but it is the ultimate. When we talk about savings, we talk about it in that way as Eskom. Then we start disaggregating it. And it's also real time. When we talk about a calendar month, we mean a calendar month. We don't mean a counting month, like 15th of March to 15th of April, which could be April in other people's books. So that's important. The second is now what we do, what we are now sending out from our highway, our transmission network. That information is also, so we can measure what's going internationally, what we're sending then to the various categories of customers at a high level, without saying, this customer did this, this customer did that. We can say at a high level, the provinces did this, the regions did this, and our international customers did this. What we lose is, because these are wires, we lose some heat. This is after those losses in the transmission network. So it's after we've dealt with that heat. And we can verify that data within 7 days. So after 7 days, we can say this is what we saw on our transmission network, and we can use it to correlate the savings that we saw on our generation side. So we can at least say, okay, this is, we see this, we can check it against this number. So that's the second way of measuring. And then what customers are engaged, when we engage with customers, we use this third category. We have meters on their supply points. So it's like your meter if you're a customer. Now, in Eskom, 80% of our customers, not the municipality, 80% of our customers, so either the big municipalities, our electrification customers, our large power users, 80% of them are directly metered and remotely metered. That means we can download. And only 20% of them physically have to be read, or we have to estimate because we don't have the metering. Cases. So we have about 80% that we can measure. Our key industrial customers, all of them are metered, so we can measure them. The problem with our metering here is that we measure it, but it goes immediately into a system, into our billing system, and that's where it's verified. And the problem with that is it takes time. So it's like reading your meter, giving it to the council, they put it into a system, work out your bill, and say, oh, there's a problem here. It's double your previous consumption. Let's correct it. That process takes at least 2 weeks, and in some cases up to a month. So that's the other challenge. So when customers engage with us, we can only use data 2 weeks old or a month old sometimes. So we've got to make sure we correlate all that information as well. Some customers say, you talk about savings, what savings? And the way we talk about it is because we can see it on the other two areas, and then we still have to engage with them on this issue. This information is important to engage customers on a case-by-case basis as well. So we can understand their growth, their previous consumption, and engage with them on what they're saving. So this is the information we use to do that. The challenge with this is when they talk about March, like I said, it's an accounting month. It's not a calendar month. It's based on whatever time the meters have been read. So 15th or the 23rd or the 24th of the month. So that's the other challenge here as well. But when you look at it this way, this is what we see, and I'll go through that. This is now from a system. Remember I talked about generation, the first, and this is the ultimate measure of savings. What you see in this purple line here is our forecast against in energy per week. So that's the energy we believe we should consume, and you can see the upward tick in May because we assumed it'll get colder, and we assumed also a cold snap now. That black line is what we actually consumed against the forecast, and this green line is the savings that we've seen in terms of energy. the warning just here is that if this point here is because we had a warmer week than we expected, so we should have seen something like this. But we can see the general trend. And the general trend in terms of our energy, like the fuel that we're using, is a saving of close to 5% on the system level. So we've seen, and remember we said we ideally wanted 10%, but we've seen at least the 5%. It varies week to week, but we can see a trend, and we can see that it improved from March. In March it was about 3%. And we've added back some of the effects of load shedding and all of that. If you look at it in a different way, and this is a lot of detail, I'll try to explain it in a certain way. What this is different scenarios. That black line here is some, when we look back 2 years ago, a year ago, we did a forecast for this year and for the next 7 years, and we said this is what we think that energy will look like every week. So that's this black line. This red line here is something that we did last year in November, where we understood how the weather would be, and we had some prediction, better prediction of the load, and we said that's what we think it'll be. And we predicted a cold snap in May, so that's why you see this little peak. Then these four colors here, this purple, that light yellow, or dark yellow, green, and this other line here, which should be brown, are four scenarios for winter. Where now that we enter winter, we have some better understanding of the demand, and we can say that purple line is if we went backwards. That means we achieved no savings. We went backwards. We lost everything we could gain now. Everyone stopped saving. We go back to that line, and you can see that black line, that purple line, and the red line are pretty close to each other. That's a true indication of a possible maximum. This line here is it's called scenario B, is if we achieve, we lock in what we currently save in, around 5%. But we don't go backwards, but we don't go forwards as well. So that's that scenario. But it's again predicting a cold winter. That means you start in May and it's cold. The green line is now we somehow accelerate our savings. We get everyone to get down quickly to their targets. And that's that scenario with a cold winter. And the last scenario here is if we have a warm winter. So things pan out better than we expected. It's warmer, so we have less energy consumption. But why these scenarios are important is we're tracking actual demand against those four scenarios. And you can see that we are tracking between the medium, those two scenarios, which shows, again, another perception of savings. We can see savings there as well. I won't go through this slide. It's just a different way of looking at it. Just in terms of our savings, maybe as a summary, what we have seen is from our billing data, that's the third way of measuring, we can see savings, but it's not 10%. But our April real-time data shows us 4 to 5, and the data from the billing shows 4 to 5% savings against what we forecast, so the different views that I showed. If you look at the real-time system, it correlates with that. It's 4 to 5% savings on energy and the 4 to 7% on maximum demand. That is where, you know, as I said, we put the foot on the accelerator. We can see savings there. We've now analyzed the top 12 metros and municipalities because we've engaged with them. If you look at them as a group, we can also see a similar trend. And again, it's against forecast, not what they consumed last year, it's what we expected them to consume. So taking into account some level of growth and so on. So we see 4 to 5%. Key industrial customers, we see up to 8% savings, up to 8%, again based on their demand that we expected for this period. So it takes some growth into account. So they're saving about 8. So there's more detail that's available, but this is at a high level what we're seeing as savings. So we can see now everyone is coming to bring in savings to the party. It's just trying to get them to where we think they should get to the next step. So the way we're doing that is engagement processes. We had a kickoff meeting with the top 11 metros. The Minister of Public Enterprises was there with the DME representatives and ourselves and the Department of Provincial Local Government. And then we've had two sessions with them, and now there's been a task team formed that is meeting again this week. Some of the issues that came up initially when we were doing load shedding, and that's one of the reasons we also had to consider when we stopped. Firstly, not all the municipal customers were shedding load. So the municipalities decided who they wanted to shed and not. And there was a conflict with some of the Eskom customers who had competitors in those areas. So that was a concern. The other one is some municipalities decided to shed outside the times everyone had publicly put out. There were some where they decided not to shed on a Saturday or Friday afternoon. there's some who, because it was not equitably shared, some customers were shared more than 6 hours a week, which was the arrangement we had made. And then some municipalities stopped shedding because they thought they achieved the savings, but we couldn't agree on that. But the unilaterality stopped. So this was also creating a lot of concerns and tension. After our meeting, various issues were tabled, and a task team is now working through these issues. And some of them are put up there. And I think the major issues, I'll list maybe three. I think the first one is, how do we know we're saving? How do we measure and verify what we're saving and against what target? How do you decide that city of Johannesburg has grown this much, city of Cape Town has grown this much, and we're saving this much? So it's getting to agreement that makes sense for everyone. The second big issue is to achieve the remaining targets the energy savings, it requires investment and incentives, which the municipalities themselves could not handle on their own. How do we group all the initiatives together and maybe go together to government and say, how do we engage on this process, but go as one body? And then there's very specific. And then the third big issue is around communication, especially dealing with new connections, around putting on new load, and how do we deal with that. So I think those are the major issues that we need to thresh out with the municipalities and government and reach a common communication platform on these issues and also accelerate some of the progress. So the team has been working on it behind the scenes, and they're meeting again on the 23rd to see where we're at. The second engagement process has been with key industrial customers, but other large power users have also been involved. So the various sector representatives like construction, even the Association of Municipal Undertakings have been represented, but it's chaired by a representative of industry, of large industry, and it provides advice directly to the chief executive. They meet every second week, and there are various working streams who deal with the same kind of issues, and they meet nearly every week in some cases. And their focus is to firstly get agreements on protocols where they're necessary, and some of the protocols are the same issues like how do we measure and verify the savings, protocols on communication in terms of emergencies and so on, as well as debate certain issues that are happening within the Eskom recovery program. For example, cogeneration. All these programs for independent power producers, they would also engage on that and provide support and advice. And that's been happening, but we also use it as a forum to share the same kind of information we shared with you to them, so that they also understand where we're at in terms of our risks. These two engagement processes have been happening in parallel, and in the middle of June, the intention is to bring them together to discuss common issues as well, such as how do we measure and verify your savings, because that's been questions both sides have been asking. We kept them separately because we didn't want arguments to erupt. We wanted to focus on getting to the detail and understanding the problems, and then we're going to bring them together to now talk about common issues. So that's hopefully going to happen in mid-June. But both these processes are aimed at also accelerating the savings that we need. And it also helps us in engaging in then NERT or whatever is going to replace NERT as well. It helps us do some background work in those forums. Okay. Can I move on to winter? To get to the crux. If you look at winter 2008, I've talked about the scenarios. Scenario A, B, and C. I've missed out scenario D. It's the same scenarios I showed you. A being no more savings with a cold winter. B being we sustain the current levels of savings with a cold winter. And C is we accelerate the savings that we get, and also cold winter. Our reality is somewhere around scenario B. That's what we see. On the supply side, we've looked at our maintenance plan. Our maintenance plan is updated nearly every week because as new things come up, you need to move certain things. So this is a plan as of last week. It allows a certain level of operation reserves, like we've talked about. And then the big challenge is to say we can't exactly predict how our plant will perform. It's very hard to say it's going to be 2,000 this week, 3,000 next week. So we do sensitivities around a range. And that range is between 2,000 and 4,000 megawatts. Of either plant being out or we have to reduce their outputs in the short term. So that's the sensitivity. Color coding, just to repeat, we use the same color coding, green, yellow, orange, red, and brown. And later on, when you read it, we put in a different way of explaining it. It's the same explanation, just well, you can read it at your own leisure. But it's also explaining. But the key point is our focus must be load shedding, must be the last scenario, under any last resort, under any emergency. But we have to do it if we feel that system security is at risk. And that's our obligation. We can't let it go to the... We can sort out why it happened later, but we have to do it to protect system security. But it is our last resort. Now, the colors... If we go backwards to scenario A, which means that we lose all our savings, it is not a pretty picture. If you look under even optimistic generation performance, there are many weeks where it's brown. That's brown, that's brown, that's red, that's red. These are orange, the lighter colors. These are all brown. If you go to 4,000, if you've got bad generation performance, or worse than average, we shed in every week in winter. So scenario B is our current reality, and our performance of a generation plant is actually currently below 2,000. You can see if it goes above to 3,000, there are some weeks, which is now, which we're getting through, where it'll be very tight, where we could be shedding. Why we are not is because it has been warmer and generation plant performance has been better than expected. But if it had happened, if it was a cold snap, we would have to relook at those weeks and see what we have to do in terms of our plant maintenance. If we can achieve greater savings, then the picture looks much better. You can see it in weeks of green later on, up in later parts of winter. What we try to do is our plant maintenance, we have a few units that we can move around. So as we get into that week, we say you can do that maintenance, but if we see there are problems, we say please move it to the later period or after winter. So we have one or two units, we have some flexibility around doing that. But other plant maintenance we've given out already, if the plant is open, we have to leave it and let it finish. So there are some challenges. The second thing is we are sensitive to generation performance. If it's bad, we have periods where we have to shed load. So we must understand that. It is sensitive to that. And it's important that we do not lose at least the current level of savings and then work on building, seeing if we can get further savings. It will help us build a bit more of a buffer so we don't have unpredictable load shed. I think that's the worst case.
Is that in your scenario C?
That's scenario C.
What is scenario C in terms of actual savings? Because what you're saying is that we're seeing about 5% now. That is clearly more than 5%.
Scenario B would be the 5%.
Ah.
Scenario C is close to 10%.
Yeah. So we need the 10%. That's what you're saying.
If you go there, then we are safe in that we don't even have, we have a lot more buffer to deal with, a lot more uncertainty. If we don't do that, we can still get through winter, but it requires us to focus on plant performance, manage it very, very carefully. And also ensure that we do not lose any of our current savings. So we've got to keep that message going. It'll be tight. We could get through, but it'll be tight. As we drive more savings, the picture gets much better. And we can do other things as well. So that's the winter prediction to show you the range that we're planning for. And we keep watching all three scenarios. On a weekly, daily basis, we come together every week to review it, make decisions around all the maintenance issues. If necessary, we meet even more regularly if we feel it's a cold. Like this week, we would have met tomorrow if it was a cold week. There was a particular spell coming in. So we have these mechanisms in ESCOM now to help us manage the plan as well. I also want to focus on the transmission network. This is now the delivery, the highway, and there are some constraints there. Now I'll focus on them as provinces. The first one is Gauteng, which is we think the concern, biggest concern. We talked about it last year as well in May. The challenge there is we've seen a rapid growth, but also not enough investment in the infrastructure, enough transmission and distribution network put in to support that growth. And the plan will take at least 5 years of continue. That means there's work in progress, there's already equipment put in this year. It just keeps up with the growth. And we only overtake it in 5 years' time. So the risk stays with us for that period. And this is both on in the city side as well as in the various cities as well as on the bulk transfer. So we have several points where a single fault will cause interruptions. It's localized, but it will cause interruptions. You cannot avoid an interruption. and then your response must be quick enough to reduce the impact. So either you must have, firstly you're trying to prevent the fault happening, so you make sure the maintenance is done, you prevent fires, you clean the vegetation under the lines, you try to do as much of that as possible within the restrictions that you have. And then the second is ensuring where we think we have concerns in that space, so we can respond quickly. So those are the two things we've been trying to do in this area. The second challenge is KwaZulu-Natal, although the situation has improved compared to last year. What we are vulnerable to is we have 7 major lines going through to KwaZulu-Natal. If any one of them fail, we're vulnerable. If 2 of them fail, we're definitely shedding some load. So that's the challenge we face in KwaZulu-Natal. And why we mention it is in winter, we get ice storms. And 7 years ago, we had a severe ice storm and 3 lines collapsed. We responded fairly quickly to that, but now the vulnerability is even 2 lines collapsing. And what we need to do is we've strengthened a lot of those lines, put in stronger towers and a few other things, but we're vulnerable to those kinds of situations and we've got to keep watching that. And those risks only get alleviated in 2009, so that will take some time. The other areas in Mpumalanga, east of Nelspruit, towards the Mozambican border, the towns towards the Mozambican border, where we have a single corridor, and if we have a single fault, those areas are vulnerable to interruption supply. We have spares there, but it is a concern, and it will also take a few years to sort out. And we are challenged here also by servitude acquisition. The last one is in Limpopo, north of Polokwane, north of Matox area, where it's mainly rural area, but where they're vulnerable to also single failures on that network, where we could have outages, and we have to also respond pretty quickly to those. So those, in terms of the 4 provinces, those are 4. We have Western Cape has become much stronger because of recent infrastructure that we added, as well as the gas turbines, so has the Eastern Cape. And the Free State is also fairly secure, although significant incidents could be a problem. We're fairly secure. Northern Cape has fairly low load, doesn't have a big demand, so it's also fairly secure. But with these 4 provinces, we have to watch very carefully. In general, we also have to be very clear that you only build a network to handle 1 or 2 incidents at the most. If you have multiple incidents, like we had the severe ice storm the 1 year, you can't build for that. So we have to respond to those, be ready to respond, prepare for it, but you can't necessarily preempt it. You can do as much as you can to mitigate it, like prevent the fires and so on, but there are some risks that could happen. Our focus there is ensuring we have enough emergency spares to respond quickly, and we've been building that stockpile over the last year. It is definitely better than last year already, this year. Spare equipment. Okay, so the conclusions, 3 points that I want to conclude with. The first one, as you've seen from the scenarios, we still require the energy savings. And it's not just about balancing supply and demand, but also for these constraints we have on the transmission network. It helps in both. And we have to be clear that in some of our transmission networks, a single failure could still result in localized interruptions of supply. So that's what we're trying to prevent. The second big issue is the coal. We have improved it. It has improved in April, but it's still going to be under pressure because it's not ideally where we should be. We are getting closer to the 20 days. The challenge is on delivering that coal, getting it out of the ground and delivering it. And it's not the procurement process. We've procured it. It's getting it to the power station. It's not a challenge. But our current plans have been based on a high demand. That means we're assuming there's no savings, and if savings do happen, it's a bonus. So we've been trying to plan on that basis for winter. And with that plan, we anticipate us keeping the stockpile at close to 20 or getting to 20 days through winter, not going below. But we have to manage it very, very carefully every day. For example, if we hear on Monday that a certain part of the road has collapsed for whatever reason, we have to fix it the next day. If a call, there's a strike at a mine or a strike at a transport company, we have to resolve it within a day. Otherwise, we start losing ground. So that's attention to detail that we need to spend to focus on. And then the third one, is, I think it's a repeat. We have to achieve the target level savings, but obviously within ESCOM, we have to focus on our plant performance, keep making sure that we keep as much plant in service as possible. So, Chair, that's the conclusion of my presentation.
Thank you very much. I think that was quite a detailed submission. I wanted to, before I open for questions and engage in the second session of this particular meeting, I had wanted to begin the meeting by just spending some time to recall and remember some of those compatriots and fellow human beings whose lives were lost over this last weekend, and indeed the last 2 weeks in this extraordinary turn of events in terms of the violence in our country, and particularly seemingly focused on people who are not South African citizens. And I thought that, and I'd wanted to do this at the beginning of the meeting, but there were not too many members present. Could we just rise and observe a few-second silence in memory of, at least I understand that 22 people who lost their lives in this period of time, including children. Can I request that the committee rises and observes a moment's silence? Thank you, ma'am. I think I'm going to kick off by just asking and posing a few scenarios. Firstly, I think that, and I'm glad that you raised the issue of the load shedding that happened earlier, and particularly worrisome to me was the fact that we stopped in the way that we did. Now, I'm quite new to this portfolio, and I've been told that when we talk about a saving, it's not a saving you can store. It's a saving on an ongoing basis. In other words, it reduces the load on the equipment and plants that we've got generally. It's like a motor car, as you pointed out. The faster you drive, the harder you run the engines, the more likely you are to actually encounter problems. And clearly, you want to save on those running costs, so that you can take out a few stations, maintain them, put them back into operation, take out a few others and so on. But when you're running everything hard, things are not necessarily optimal. So it's quite clear from your presentation to me that the issue was not savings, that we did not get to a point where we could say, okay, everybody saved enough, and therefore we're going to stop load shedding. It's quite clear that there were other issues, and clearly there are pressures as well. What worries me a great deal is that you cannot run a utility such as yours operating on pressure from the outside. I've also done some research, and I understand that what we had in terms of load shedding isn't what we call blackouts. Blackouts is a systems collapse. Now, when you have a systems collapse, it's a problem getting it back online again. And when you talk about the scenarios in other countries where they have neighboring countries that can help them kickstart their whole process because they've got excess capacity in neighboring countries, we don't have that situation. So what I've been told is whereas in 2003, half of Canada and the western half of the United States was without electricity,
They were out of electricity for about 3 days, 2.5 days or something of that sort, and they were able to come back online because they were able to use their neighboring states and neighboring countries to assist them. Because we don't have that kind of backup, we will be in a situation where it's quite unpredictable how long it will take us to get back on stream. The point that I'm making is what concerns me the most of this presentation is, number one, that Eskom seems to be really affording the kind of pressures that you get, which are inevitable, and as I say to you, political, social, all of those things, inevitable. Nobody likes load shedding. Nobody likes the fact that we've got an energy crisis. Nobody likes to pay more for electricity. But the reality is all of that is where we're at. Now, if we're going to be in a situation in winter where you're working at, what, 38%, 38,000 megawatts, which is your peak that you were talking about, and what your total capacity is about 40,000. Yeah, 40,000, and you then get a few problems and things go, you get ice storms, let's say. And instead of load shedding, because you're under pressure politically and otherwise, you keep the systems running only to endanger our security of supply. Now that, for me, is a scenario that I would not want. Okay? So I think that if the one message that you get from this portfolio committee and parliament is around that issue, that to operate under the kind of pressures, while we understand it and it's all understandable and so on, the first and primary concern must be the security of supply. And I know that you said so, but I think we must reiterate it from where we sit, because that's not going to serve this country, and it's certainly not going to assist anybody. So that's the first thing that I wanted to just place on record and observe. The second issue is this matter of load shedding. You talked about the task team that you've got looking at all of the issues that arose during this period of load shedding, and but you skirted the issue of whether, in fact, one of the issues that they are discussing is whether we are going to have a load shedding schedule during winter. Because it's quite clear, again, that at the moment, you know, with those three scenarios that you sketched, we need 10%. We're not getting 10%. We're not getting anywhere close to 10%. You can't keep on just hoping that you're going to get 10%. And frankly, it seems to me that it's absolutely necessary to go into a scheduled load shedding process over winter. I want to know whether that's one of the issues for discussion, and if so, if you have any details, and if not, when can we expect details? And lastly, just while you have a strong dependence on, obviously, your generating capacity and so on, which is something you guys control, okay? This is your coal supplies, one of them, your equipment, your spares, all of that. That's your generating supply side management, which is something completely in Eskom's hands. The thing that is not in Eskom's hands is firstly your issues around what happens and so on, given your transmissions and unforeseen events. But that is something that we expect you to try and mitigate in terms of your plan. But what is not in your control is the consuming part of it. And although Eskom has played a role in terms of demand-side management, my contention is that ultimately that's government's responsibility, that you need to follow certain guidelines and certain policies that set out in government framework. And really, the truth of the matter is you guys have been operating in a vacuum, because there haven't been those plans set in place. What I want to know from your side, to what extent are you guys at ESCOM satisfied with the supply side, the demand side management? To what extent do you think that more can be done? If so, what more can be done? Because clearly from what has consistently been told to us, it seems to me that a lot more can be done in terms of the demand side management, I think. From my perspective, I don't think that ESCOM is it's got a role to play, but it can't be the stakeholder in terms of demand side management. That's from my side. Members?
Goloro. Thank you very much, Chairperson. Thank you very much for the presenters. I've got two quick questions, Chairperson. The first one is on the measurement verification point of customers. You mentioned the different customers, but how much do you measure electricity that they use? I was just interested, Chairperson, on the international customers' savings. Firstly, I want to know as to whether they are also experiencing load shedding. Are they also part of this load shedding program? Do they have to save also this 10% as well? If so, are they also complying with that call? That is the first one. The second one, Chairperson, will be still on the international customers. If they are also part of this program, are they also going to be affected by this 53% tariff increment? If yes, are they going to also pay that increment of 53% over a period of time, for instance? Like I heard recently that there's an agreement between ESCOM and the ANC that this increment should take a period of how many years, by the way? Is it 5 years? Yeah. If so, also, are they going to be affected in the same way? Thank you very much.
Okay. Go ahead.
Thank you, Chair. I'll start by responding, and then I'll ask Kenan to amplify. But before I start answering the questions, I think it's important to emphasize, as Kenan has said, that we are far from being out of the loop. The situation is still tight, and we're still vulnerable, and we'll continue to be vulnerable for the next few years. So I think it's very important for every South African to realize that we are far from out of this crisis. I'll briefly start with the issue of the governance, which the Chairperson referred to. Our chief executive refers to it as you should avoid a crowded cockpit, because you can't have a crowded cockpit when you are driving a jumbo jet through stormy travel. So it's important that people who are trusted are put in the appropriate position, and when they are put in the appropriate position, they should be trusted but remain accountable. And then there should be clarity of roles and responsibilities, because the last thing you need in such a tight situation is a lack of clarity on where to go. If you will look at systems operations, for instance, this is a real-time management of a system. If I can go back to the 24th of January this year, the load losses were standing at anything above 4,000 megawatts. Going up to 6,000. And then the system ops were seeing that there is a real risk of a proper blackout, not a brownout and load shedding, as the Chairperson has referred to. And if you get to that situation, it's a very serious situation because you can get the whole system being down for up to 2 weeks or more. So it's important that the risk management be done appropriately, because at that time when it's so critical, you can't then say, let me consult whether I should stop or not, because otherwise you risk bringing the whole grid down. I think we'll like to appeal to the public so that there's an appreciation that this system needs to be managed on a real-time basis, and the risks have to be managed on a real-time basis. Thanks for that, but thanks for your support in terms of the governance processes going forward. In terms of the issue of security of supply, that's the reason we exist, and it's important that we expand on the key risks that Kenan has enunciated. And we need to emphasize that the risks are not only in generation capacity. The risks are also in some transmission corridors, like in Gauteng and going to KwaZulu-Natal and Northern Limpopo, as Kenan has identified. So, and then there are also risks on the distribution network, both on the Eskom side and on the municipality. So we need to look at the whole value chain, because it's not simply a generation a capacity issue. But as to the winter load shedding schedule, according to the recovery plan, on the 1st of July, we're supposed to move on to power conservation program. The power conservation program is supposed to be a phase where we lock in the savings, mainly by regulation, because they are made to understand that it's, given the timelines required, it's almost impossible to do it by legislation. So it might be done by regulation. And Kenan can amplify in what steps where we are in terms of planning for the power conservation, which is supposed to be on the 1st of July, and what we're looking at. In terms of demand side management effectiveness, it's no secret that there are significant opportunities in this area, both in lighting and in heating. But unfortunately, it takes time. It's not something which you can do an overnight and solve. The obvious, quicker solution is to move to more efficient CFL lightings instead of the incandescent bulbs. That we have a program of changing over 20 million bulbs over the next year. So there is a program to go there. So that is the quicker one. But the other solutions of converting to solar water heaters and for geysers, it takes a long time. For the complete rollout, it can take up to 3 to 5 years. But we need to start. That's the important thing. And all these issues also require money. This will be deliberated in with NESA on Friday, because the quicker as South Africans we realize that we've got a problem, we need to solve it, this is how we solve it, and we get on with it, the better. And then we start implementing instead of us keeping on debating these issues. We need to move to a mindset of getting to solutions. Measurement verification, I'll also ask Kenan to deal with. In terms of international customers, we see them as like any of our customers, but there are actually three types of international customers. There are the types where there is a firm supply, which means you have contracted to supply come what may. And then there is a contract where it's unfirm, which means you supply when you can. You have capacity to supply. And then there is also a category of commodity-linked customers, like your smelter in Mozambique, for instance, that the price is more linked to the commodity prices and to exchange rates rather than the cost of production of electricity. That's a long legacy issue which we have inherited, which we have to deal with. Because they were brought at a time when we had excess capacity, and they helped us make sure that they are not underutilized assets. Still talking about international customers, something we need to really pay strong attention to is that we actually import a lot of electricity. We import upwards of 1,250 megawatts from Gabora Basa in Mozambique. And going forward with the developments both in Mozambique, on the Zambezi, and in Inga, it's quite likely that going forward, we are likely to be buying more electricity from across our borders as these projects are developed and seen as viable. So we really, as South Africans, need to tread with caution on how we treat external customers, because the same might happen to us in years to come. So it's important to have the balance. But they are treated like any other customers. If they are non-firm and they need to be load-shed, they are shed like everybody else, but can amplify. In terms of price increases, because also, like I said earlier, they are treated like any other customer, they will also be impacted by the price increases which is awarded. Given the smoothing principle which has been mooted even at the Energy Summit on Friday, that dynamic then will need to be dealt with, because the reality of the matter is if you are going for a smoothing principle and you are saying then the government should put the difference of the money, and then you also have got external customers, you then need to deal with the dynamics that do you subsidize your local and international customers, or you need to subsidize your local customers. So that's a dynamic which will have to be looked at very carefully. Also, I think the regulator will pronounce. I think I'll leave it at that and then ask Karen to amplify, and if there are gaps in our response, we'll cover that.
Thank you. Yeah, I just wanted also to talk about security of supply. Thank you also for the support. One of our jobs as system operators is to ensure the security of supply, and for us, load shedding is then done to maintain that. So we don't then, in fact, it can be a problem for even the minister or our chief executive. He cannot stop us deciding to shed load at that point for security supply. It's clear, it's mandated in various regulations, and the authority rests clearly on that issue, and that's our focus, because we do not want to go that route.
Concern is more along the lines of what happened at the United States
exactly.
A while ago when the 2003 blackouts happened. Apparently there were some trees that caught a light near a line, and instead of cutting off that section of the grid to protect the rest, they let it slide. And I don't know why, but the one thing I know I don't want to see happen in this country is the person who's in charge, who's meant to do that, operates on the basis of what will government say, or what will Kosamba say, if you're with me. And it's very, very important, I think, that you communicate this to your employees.
We will do that, and that's my responsibility, so I'll do that. The second point is around the load shedding schedule. I think FD mentioned the action that we are doing. The challenge we're facing, firstly, if anything happened now, we would use the way we would shed is the way we shed before. The same kind of schedules, and we've developed those schedules. We are engaging with some of the municipalities to sort out some of the problems we face. And that's part of the task team, so we're going to work on that. The challenge we face is how do we implement this power energy conservation program from the 1st of July? Because within government and other stakeholders, the agreement is still not 100%. ESCOM has put forward proposals, and we're engaging with them. And as soon as possible, we need to reach agreement so that we can work on that. So I believe some of it was discussed at the Energy Summit, and also there's through the NERT or whatever is going to replace this National Electricity Response Team program will go into that as one of the major focus areas in the next few weeks. Because we need, that is probably our main focus. If that doesn't, we have to make sure that works, or we are clear about how that will work, and then decide whether we're going to continue with any other form of shedding. So that's what we're waiting for. But we are engaging with government strongly on that issue and other stakeholders. I can't give you a timeline because we're not the chair, we're not driving that process, although we've placed great emphasis on it. The timelines still have to come from, I would say, DME on that, and we're engaging with them. But we've clearly said we'd like to see it implemented by the 1st of July. Just in terms of the DSM program, just to amplify, one of the issues we clearly realized is that ESKOM has only some of the customers. Actually, a majority are in the municipalities. And we support them, but the municipalities also have a big role to play in putting together demand-side management programs. And they face two challenges, the funding and the capacity to execute, which we're trying to help in both. But some of the funding issues also relate to the budgetary processes in government and internally, which we need to work on. So what we're trying to do is work with them, try to put together a joint proposal and engage with Treasury and a few other people on how do we put together a common package and how can we support the municipalities in accelerating certain elements of the DSM program, such as PFLs and a few other opportunities that might exist. What we're trying to avoid is the way they've been doing it in the past is what is called load shifting, which means that all they do is they take a demand from this point and move it to this point, but it's still the same. You still use the same energy. What we're trying to do is get them to be efficient. So we're trying to shift them also from those technologies to energy efficiency technologies, which is the other problem we're facing. So these are things we're working very hard. We first want to focus on the top 11, because that's like 80-20 principle, and then move on after that. The pace of acceleration, I think Bongani has covered. We need to engage with NERSA and Treasury to give us the funds to accelerate or decelerate basis based on that as well. Just in terms of also measurement and verification, I think Bongani has mentioned, but just to reiterate, international customers, we have said three categories. The first one is our legacy issues, like Mozo, Mozambique. The second is where South Africa, we sign long-term contracts with certain countries. Botswana would be one of them. And the third would be where we can supply countries based on what we've got available, but only on a short-term basis, and we can cancel at any time. We have some countries on that contract. The way we deal with the first is we have a firm, and the second is we have firm contracts, we have to honor them. But in both cases, we have said we need you to also save. We measure it, we verify it, we engage with them where they go above. We go back to them and say this is not good enough. What they do internally is up to them. So some of the countries have been shedding. Some countries have figured out how to get alternative energy sources or provide you their more expensive generation, their own generation. So that's the engagement process. But we monitor them clearly, and we have seen them save. One or two have gone up, and then we try to get them down and focus on that. The last category where they use it in short term, we at the moment say there's no energy available. So if they use it, because the network is connected, so if they have a problem and then suddenly we see a burst, we can't stop it, but what we tell them is sort it out within the next hour or half an hour. And during that time, whatever energy they use, they pay at our marginal costs. So they don't pay at the average cost, they pay at whatever we're using to generate at that point, the highest, most expensive. So it's a very expensive proposition for them. We are disincentive. And at some stage, if there's a pattern, we're part of a power pool, we have a process of engagement before we can just cut them off, because that can also black out their country, so we have to be responsible in how we do it. But we have a process of engagement, protocols are well laid out, we engage every 6 months just to make sure we review any problems we've had. And I think that works fairly well. It's a very disciplined group of utilities in that sense. So I'm fairly happy with that, and we can see that's working. So hopefully, I think that answers, I hope, most of your questions.
Do you want to add something, Mr. Governor? Mm-hmm. Okay.
Okay, the additional question on the generation capacity issue. I was going to come to that maybe towards the end in the conclusion, because as much as we are saying that the customers should save up to 10% of the utilization, what is important for us as ESCOM is to make sure that the plant availability is the maximum and the reliability is at the maximum. That's why we also have a target to make sure that the plant which is not available is not more than 2,500 megawatts. As you have seen from the graph shown earlier, although the trend is on improving, it is important that it is sustained, and a lot of effort is going into that. For instance, the new chief officer of generation, instead of managing performance on an average for the month, is managing performance on daily performance, so that there is a brutal focused daily focus. So it's actually important because and the issue of maintenance, there's always a temptation when the reserve margin is tight for us to be aged, you can defer maintenance, because we've been very clear that certainly my simplistic view as an accountant is that to maintain is not different to your car, which you need to maintain. If it's 20,000 megawatts and you need to change oil, you change oil. You don't say I'll wait later. So it's important that we follow the life of plant maintenance schedule, and there is no compromise on that. It's also important to make sure that we've got all the coal supplies which we can get our hands on. We're getting very good support from the coal industry, and we're also getting very good support from the Department of Minerals and Energy as to going forward, how can we sustainably maintain security of supply as fuel, as far as coal is concerned. Some of it is early days yet, but there's some very good ideas to make sure that there's security of supply going forward. And then there is the issue of making sure that we've got the best people we can now lay our hands on to make sure that there's a sustainable plant. It's important for the benefit of all to note that we don't just work alone as ESCOM IDEA. We work with global companies which are called the original equipment manufacturers, or so-called OEMs. So all these companies who manufacture this equipment, even in the maintenance regime, we make sure that we work with them so that we can make sure that it's as reliable as it can. So it's important to emphasize in summary that not only should we as ESCOM be looking at customers to save electricity, but we should be making sure we run our plant as efficiently and effectively as possible.
Can I just, on that very issue, I hear what you're saying, but I would very much like the managing director of supply, what do you call yourself? Systems ops. Like that, yeah. To give us a sense from a technical point of view. Because you've talked about your coal supply, which is your one aspect. Your second issue is relating to your transmission lines, your added spares and so on. But in terms of your plants and the kind of so-called buffers that you've managed to create during the load shedding and so on, are you completely satisfied that your fleet, your generators, your power stations are up to scratch to meet the challenges of winter?
I can't say that I'm completely satisfied. I think it's clear that the one thing is we've identified which power stations have concerns and which don't. So I think we've generally done that. There's one or two we need a bit more work done to assess that. And that assessment was done internally. It was done also by some external parties. We did it a year ago, and then there's been some updates. And currently, as we speak, there's also a German group company coming out, a utility is helping us with the current. So we had the Americans first, we've had the French, and now we've had German companies to give us a different views on different parts of our plant. I would say, at least, I think we're confident that we understand the problems in 90 to 95% of our fleet. We know where the risks are. But there are some plants where we can't predict, and we'll know they have problems. We can't predict when we'll have what we call these boilers. It's piping, and we know they've been affected, but we don't know exactly, so we've got to prepare for it. So I can't say confident. What I'm confident about, though, is we know how to deal with them. So we have built some buffer. I'm very happy with the coal supply improvement. That's definitely a positive. It has worked out fairly well. And we have enough now, but we need to continue maintaining that. But if we continue the trends we've seen, I think it's positive. We've got to just keep it going. We've seen an improvement in plant performance. It bodes well, but we've got to sustain it. And what happens is if the plant goes down, we're going to follow a specific regime of how we deal with it, including load shedding. So we will not resist going back to load shedding if required. If we see a trend in plant performance, we will then shed load and then say, okay, let's figure out what to do. So that's how we'll manage the system, and I think we have enough space to do that. So it won't be, if you see load shedding, it won't be hopefully catastrophic, but we'll do it to prevent any other situation arising. I'll only say we're confident once we've finished a complete review of our plants, and that will still take some time. There's some plants we can't review until we take it down again for maintenance. Only when we've done that can we say we know exactly what all the problems are. There's about, I would say, two more stations we need to do that. So that's probably where we're at.
Maybe you want to also talk to some of the demothballed stations. They've come online as expected, I believe, sooner than expected as well. Do you want to give us an update on that? And then also you might, either yourself or Mr. Nwababa might be able to talk to us a little bit about the power station build through, the Madupis and so on. I understand that's coming along quite nicely, and you might want to explain why that is as well in your response.
Okay. If I can start with the major contracts which we have entered into. In terms of Madupi is a 4,800 megawatt coal plant in Lephalale, in Limpopo, the coal-fired power station. The cost of that project will be in the region of 84 billion rand. We have contracted for boilers and turbines with two companies, Alstom and Hitachi, and boilers and turbines make up about 70% of the cost of a power station. We have also last week contracted for civils. There was a consortium, you have seen a press release in the paper that we signed a contract for 2.9 billion with a consortium of companies including Conco and Marine Roberts. So it's very much in implementation stage. And we are making room for making sure that we've got accommodation for people there, because at its peak there might be 10,000 people working there. So it's a colossal project. And then, so that's in Madupi. And then in Bravo is also a similar sized power station, but in the feedback area, where we have also contracted for boilers and turbines. And then we are finalizing the contracts for the civils. Already what they call terracing work, which is basically flattening the ground where you're going to build. On both sides, the terracing work is already in progress. So these are not just plans. These are not just investments made. These are not just issues where you have made procurement decisions, but there's actually physical activity on the ground, which is happening. And the last one is in Ingula, which is a pump storage scheme in the Drakensberg area, where you have to drill a tunnel through the mountain and you've got one dam at the bottom and another one on top to pump water up so that when you pump water down, you can generate electricity. So all these mega projects, there's already activities happening as we speak.
Just to add also the other project, which is Gas One, if you go now, you'll actually see some of the plant already up. We're targeting between January and May next year to start getting them on. But the plant is actually starting to be delivered already also on site. If you look at what we call our return to service plants, we have three power stations, Camden, Crossley, and Komati. Camden, seven of the eight units are online, which we're using. The last one should come online anytime this month, and then take some time to get up to speed. A challenge with this plant, because they're coming back, they're not actually all new, is we've got to monitor their performance and then get them up, fix up all the problems, take them down. So there's a, what we call a maturity phase, which it has to go through, and then in his past experience it takes up to 3 years to get up to ideal performance, but we're trying to get that up as fast as possible. Crossplay, which is the second power station, we've already had our first unit online in March. A second one is also being commissioned, so hopefully online is also before middle of winter. And then we've got to do another 6 units after that, but that will take another year and a half at least. The last station is Komati, and for the first unit actually synchronizing pretty soon. We've already started it up. So that's also now going to produce megawatts this winter, the first unit. I can't remember how many units, I think it's 10 as well. It's 10. We still have to get the other 9 going over the next 3 years. But like I said, the challenge there with these units is then monitoring performance. It requires a lot more attention to manage performance because it's a mix of all the units.
If I may just add that the return to service will still be delivered by 2011 as was planned, because it is now being done faster than originally envisaged, because the original plan was that you look at Camden and it will be a prototype, you check what worked, what doesn't work, and then you move on to, you finish the program and then you move to the other station. But given the capacity constraints, we're doing everything in parallel.
I think also, to its credit, as I understand it, a lot of the planning for these stations, particularly on your Madupis and your Igulas and so on, were done a few years ago already. So notwithstanding the fact that you were not building, you were at least planning, and so you're able to move quite fast on this. Otherwise, we'd be still stuck in the planning phase. Members, any further questions? I wanted us to just focus a little bit about the demand side management. I see that you were talking about your smart metering and so on. Earlier on, and I bumped into the Ekurhuleni mayor at the electricity summit on Friday, and he was explaining to me about how they have the smart metering, where you can actually, in real time, monitor the usage of. How does that work, and is that a feasible option? I mean, I always thought that the answer lay in prepaid, because people tend to monitor themselves in prepaid electricity. But this is another quite an interesting device, apparently, that has been used quite effectively there.
Yeah. The advantage with prepaid is that, I mean, you don't have to then follow up with the administration. You pay, you deal with it. The challenge, though, with prepaid is you could use it all up. And then as long as you can afford it, you can still
keep topping up.
So it doesn't mean you can manage the demand in the same way. Smart metering is more expensive, so there is a cost. But what it allows you to do is two things. It does, you can set it up so it can restrict at any point what the demand can be. So at any point in time, it restricts you. So if you try to switch on all your appliances, there's no way you can do it.
So that's what they use in Brazil.
They use a combination of that in Brazil. Not everyone, but they use that, and that's an example of what they use in Brazil. So that's the one way to keep you to your ration, for example. The second thing it can do is provide you, as well as the utility, real-time information on how you're doing. Because it is a bit more, you can download, you can monitor the user as well.
So you can, if you put a kettle on, for example, that you just bought brand new, and you can monitor on the screen, how much that thing's using.
It's possible, depending on what technology you buy, but it is possible. And the challenge now, obviously, is firstly, how do you pay for it, and how far do you roll it out, and then the scale of the rollout requires quite a bit of project management, because it requires management of taking out the meter, setting the whatever rationing you want to do, educating people on its use. So all those challenges. And if you are prepaid and you go to this, it's all the issues around how do you now deal with the administration and payment issues. But it clearly is one of the technologies you can use either now or in future to manage demand, and can also be a tool for consumers. But the challenge now is agreeing on how you roll it out. So What they did in Brazil is it was a unilateral decision made by government as part of the whole thing. So it was driven by cabinet ministers. And they set up a program and said, this is how it's going to be. It's not, we're doing it in a bit of a different way. So to decide whether we want it and then decide.
Okay. And then lastly, just this, I noticed that you spoke about cogen, but you also spoke to what you call a medium-term power producer, something or another. Okay. What is that? What is that? Explain that program.
Okay, Chair. The first program was developed to bring on plant where customers had a certain process which produced energy, and then they could use that energy to generate electricity. Now, that initial program, the way we set it out was, we'll give you a certain power purchase agreement for any excess power that you don't need. But you need to give in your tenders, and there was a process. And that the tenders closed end of May, or will close end of May, and then we've got a value. The point with that is it's a long-term agreement, and therefore it's a tender process, a bidding process, and the prices will be set once we look at the prices that come in. And there's a certain number of megawatts we were targeting, initially I think 900. I think that was what we've been saying. But it's possible it's more, but you have to evaluate anything on top of that in terms of affordability. The medium-term power purchase agreement is different, where it says we will tell you over the next, say, 8 years, here's the price part that you will be paid, and there's a ceiling to that. You can use whatever technology you want within that period. If you can meet that objective, give us your bid, and you'll probably be accepted. It doesn't matter whether it's from your waste energy or you can generate it some other way, or if it's some existing plant that you've got and you can give us more. It's whatever you can do. And it's open till the end of December, so you can give us a bid tomorrow, you can give us a bid on the 29th of December. As long as in that period, it'll be immediately evaluated, there's a time period that we'll evaluate and then give you an answer. You don't have to wait for the next person. If you're above that, then we want to evaluate you. It's not automatic. There has to be another process, probably with the regulator, how we use them. After that period, then you have to, the agreement ends, but then you can go into another program, or you can negotiate another deal.
That's smaller loads, bits of
it. It can be any size, but you get an advantage if you can come in quickly within the next few years, and then it tapers off towards the average price later on.
So basically, you'll be reliant on your individual who is coming into the program to capitalize and put in the infrastructure that they need to convert that waste energy into electricity. And you will purchase that electricity at the price.
That's right. But it's their investment.
And how's that going?
If I can add, that process has actually moved quicker than anticipated because, as Kenan said, we had to seek approval from the regulator about the process and price range. And there is a two price range. If you are in the lower, at the threshold of the lower price range, then as long as your process is technically compliant, then you are awarded the contract for this 8-year period. But if it's above that, up to a certain limit, which NERSA has approved, then we need to evaluate competitively. But all those details are now available on our website, and I presume also on NERSA's website. So it's on a first-come, first-served basis. And then in terms of the bidders, conference which was there about 2 or 3 weeks ago, because we had to agree a power purchase agreement with them also. There were no issues in terms of the power purchase agreement now that the price is transparent, and I think we're keenly awaiting industries to participate, because for some strange reason we're seen as possibly wanting to frustrate this process. I do not know why we would frustrate it when we need more capacity in the country.
Just in terms of the cogeneration, we'll only know end of May what that response is. People have been given indications between 1,500 and some people have been set up to 5,000 megawatts if you add them up. I think reality is closer to the lower level, and then there'll be a mix of people in both processes. So we're targeting hopefully between 1,500 and 3,000 megawatts of applications, but until we see it, we can't tell you exactly what.
Oh, that's fair enough. Okay, members? Looks like your job is done here. Go back and run the system. We have a storm coming. Now, thank you very much. It was quite informative, and it's really what we wanted to hear from you on this occasion of the eve of winter. Just to reiterate, I think that it'd be nice, seeing as the media is here, to reiterate that really winter depends very much, not exclusively, but very much on the amount of power your average consumer is able to save, and to not be lulled into this misapprehension that we're out of the woods. Because winter is going to be a tough time if we all don't, as South Africans, pull together and really come to the party. Hopefully that will happen, but if it doesn't happen and the security of supply is threatened at any stage, certainly this portfolio committee will not be deterred from supporting any decision that Eskom takes in terms of load shedding, because we understand very much what the alternative is, and the alternative is a blackout for most of winter, and that is something that I don't think anybody in this country, no matter what your thoughts are, and I heard some really bizarre thoughts on this issue, on the crisis, when I was at the Electricity Summit, some people actually got up and said, what crisis? We don't have one. We don't believe there is a crisis. So I think, you know, we really need to start accepting that we're in a difficulty, and that we each of us have a role to play, even if it means that all you're doing for your part is just switching off lights when you leave the room. I think that's going to help someone. So thank you very much from Eskom. We hope that you drive incognito to the airport again, and we trust that you will have a safe journey. And thank you very much for this detailed presentation and the frankness with which you've approached this topic. Thank you very much. Members, those of you who missed the announcement at the beginning of the meeting, remember next week we are at Transnet. We're going for 2 days. We're going to start off in Durban. And the interesting thing is, and you must please, please take note of